producer and founder of the Camden International Film Festival, Ben Fowley, and animator, Sam Neiman.
In studio, we will have David Micklejohn. Calling in, we have Malachi Whitten. David Micklejohn is the founder of the Budget Fabulous Films and winner and best indie film director for the Portland Phoenix.
Malachi is a 17-year-old at Casco Bay High School who writes, directs, produces, and makes the music for all his movies. He has won awards at the Portland Maine Film Festival in the student category 2 years in a row for his short films, and he has worked as an assistant camera for the Hanover House. This is a call-in show, so we would like to encourage listeners to call in at 780-4909, that is 780-4909, or log on to bluntradio.org.
Now, David, tell us, how did you decide to become a filmmaker? You said you had a funny story.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here. I went to school here at USM, and I studied poetry, and I got into filmmaking much later. I was living with my younger brother, Nathaniel, and he couldn't pay rent 1 month, and so I told him I would cover rent for him. But as collateral, he gave me his video camera. And we had always played with video cameras growing up, like we would make skits and stuff like that, but we never took it really seriously. But when he gave me his video camera, I also, around the same time, got a new computer. And so a friend of mine gave me some editing software, and all the pieces to make videos just came into my life at the same time. So I started making goofy music videos for bands that I started making just like silly videos for bands that I liked they weren't like friends of mine, like big bands, like electronic bands and rock bands that I loved. And so I would make music videos just for fun. And that's how I learned how to make films, just by practicing and making goofy videos with my friends. And that was really nice to do that. It was a great way to learn because I felt like I had zero risk. I could just do whatever I wanted and nobody could tell me it was wrong. And that was a really great way to learn. I didn't go to film school. I just learned by picking up a camera and shooting.
So how long ago was this?
That was about 10 years ago.
So because you've been into film for about 10 years, how do you think the Maine film industry has changed since then?
Well, it's interesting. I really think that calling what Maine has an industry is a little misleading. I feel like there are a lot of really creative, passionate people, but I feel like it's really hard to get like a lot of paid work in Maine because the infrastructure isn't quite here to support it in the same way that you could see it in New York or L.A. or even like Austin, Texas or San Francisco. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of great people who are working here, so I think that like the time is ripe for there to be some kind of growth in industry, which is why it's really exciting right now. 10 years ago, I mean, I'm not a real great example of somebody to speak about the industry because I work in a very low budget style, so I'm not really as ambitious with my like professional work as I am with my personal creative passionate work. 10 years ago, I didn't know anything about like the film scene, if there even was one. I moved back to Maine 5 years ago to make work here and to work with my friends, and I feel like in the last 5 years there has been the growth has been really, really rapid.
Right.
You know?
Now that you're back here in Maine, do you stay local with your work or do you branch out to other states as well?
I've done sort of a mix of things. I work in Portland, Maine, primarily. Like, this is where I live and this is where I work, and I love the stories that can be told here. But I definitely work outside of Maine, too, because I've lived a bunch of places and I have a lot of communities that I like in other cities, so I like to go out when I can, but really the stories I want to tell are all Maine-based stories.
So as a filmmaker, do you make a living?
Yeah. So I do freelance work to pay the bills, and then when I have time, I do my own creative work. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a nice balance. I mean, I have a pretty low-grade lifestyle. I feel like I can make my money stretch a lot further than other people can because I don't have a house, I don't have a car, I don't have a lot of the expenses that come with like being raising a family, for example. So like, mm-hmm. I'm a single dude and I just like have a high tolerance for low lifestyle, you know? So like, I work on my passion stuff like as much as I can because of that.
Great. Well, I want to take this time to tell listeners that this is a call-in show, so you can call in at 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. And right now we have on phone, we have Malachi Whitten. Malachi?
Yeah,
hello.
Hey, Malachi.
Hi.
So we would like to ask you, how did you get into filmmaking?
I guess I it started as when I just tried it out. I had a camera for quite a while, but I never really tried it out before. I was into game design and in writing and stuff like that. And then one time I picked up a camera and decided to spend a Saturday on film. And from the minute I started filming, I knew I fell in love with it, and I knew I was going to want to do it for the rest of my life.
Thank you, Malachi. And so you're a student here at Casco Bay High School. How does Casco Bay help you nurture your career as a filmmaker?
Without Casco Bay, I don't think I'd be as far as I am today. We have a film intensive that we're basically for a week, a bunch of kids who are interested in film can sign up and go through a week where they have to make a film and then show it in front of the entire school. And to do that intensive, I met a man named Alan Baldwin of Strong Paw Productions, and I worked on one of his films, and I met more people there and got connections, and ever since then, I've been getting on other movie sets and been getting better at my own movie.
So, because you said you've met people through Casco Bay, what is some advice that you could give another young aspiring filmmaker to network?
I guess if I would give advice, it's probably the most usual advice that everyone gives other filmmakers, is just keep making movies. Once you get a movie done with your friends, just send it into film festivals. And then the best way to meet people is going to the receptions and just shaking everyone's hands and greeting them and staying to be the last person there and just making sure that you introduce yourself to everyone and introduce your film to everyone, and that's how you get connections.
So this is for both David and Malachi. I was wondering, like, what are some financial stipulations when you're trying to get into the industry, like buying an expensive camera or lighting equipment or editing software? Like, what can you do to have a lower cost way to get into film and be passionate about it?
This is also go ahead. This is probably different for both of you as well, because Malachi, you are a student at Casco Bay High School, so I'm assuming a lot of your equipment is funded by the program. Is that true?
A lot of my equipment comes straight out of PATH, Portland Arts Technology High School, which is part of Casco Bay.
So, David, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on what role you want to play in film, because something that's really great about film work is that it's so collaborative, and you have to work with a lot of different people who each have their own passion and specialties and talents. And, you know, Malachi and I have worked on a bunch of projects together where I would be running camera and he would be my camera assistant, or I would be directing and he would be doing lights. And I think the versatility of whatever you want to do, like, if you want to do a lot of different things, you can either buy a ton of gear or you can just sort of try to get on other people's projects and let someone else organize it. I mean, I think the barriers for film right now are as low as they've ever been because of digital technology. So I think there are a lot of avenues to jump in without much cost. But I really think you just start with the community that you live in and start talking with people, and just trying to work on other people's projects is probably the better way in than, like, if you had a lot of money and you bought a lot of gear. That would get you a lot of gear, but it wouldn't get you all the people you need to collaborate on your film to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since you're a freelance filmmaker, are you expected to endure all those different jobs, or are you mostly organizing and directing?
I have a couple different ways that I work on projects. I feel like I'm decent at a lot of different things, but I'm not that great at any one particular one. So a lot of times I have a lot of clients that I work with where I will do the entire video from front to back, and that works really well for them because I can do it with myself or maybe one or two other people that I bring on board. But it's pretty low impact, and a lot of people are afraid of video because they think it's like a huge crew and you have, like, you know, giant structures and all this gear. But with me, it's just kind of like I do myself with maybe one other person. But then when I get hired for other shoots, like I just did this 10-day road trip touring around the country with 5 disco dancers, and we did a bunch of shoots in like 10 or 12 different cities. And I was assisting the camera person, but I was also running a second camera. So I can kind of like, I can swing back and forth between a lot of different positions. And I think that helps me get a lot of gigs for my freelance work because I'm sort of adaptable. And I think that's helpful when you're in that position.
So to become adaptable, you said you didn't go to film school. So I was wondering how you got that training. And Malachi, this could apply to you too. Like, what areas are you trained in and how do you get that training? David?
Yeah, I think Malachi is going to agree with me on this. Like he already said, you just keep making movies is the best way to learn. And I didn't go to film school, so I learned by making a ton of mistakes and just by making the work. You know, the work itself will train you. And I know Malachi has done a lot of work himself. As a very young student, he's created so much work, and that's the kind of stuff that will teach you if you don't want to go into an institution.
Now, Malachi?
Yeah. I learned just from watching my own movies. Usually you don't see the mistakes you've made until you've shown it to an audience and you get to see their reactions. And once you've done that, just from sitting there at the audience, you can see, okay, that works, that didn't work. And later on I'll go and I'll make another film and then see how the audience responds to that one. So yeah, I agree with David on that.
I think that's true too, because when I watch my films, I'm always like, I messed this up, messed that up, and then I think I'll do better the next time. But then at the same time, the next film, Malachi probably agrees with this, the next film is always more ambitious than the first one. So
right.
So like you have a whole new set of problems that you will screw up on and that you will learn from, and then the next film you'll correct those, but then you'll also create more for yourself. So I think like the process of learning is not something that just happens for 4 years in a school. It happens your entire life if you want it to. If you want to learn from your experience, you can continue to learn forever.
On that note, Malachi, do you intend to apply to film schools and go to film schools? And if so, where do you see your interest going after that? Do you see documentary versus film, or do you see local, like coming back to Maine versus trying to become more national?
I'm really looking towards film school because I see a lot of the training and a lot of the people I look up to actually haven't gone to film school, and they're really good at what they do. But I see film school as a way of making connections with the kind of people you want to make connections with if you want to go towards your dream. And my dream, for instance, is becoming a director in a special industry down in Hollywood at some point. So in order to get there, I feel like film school would be a good step of making connections, and I want to apply to places like NYU, USC, and those are right in the heart of like a lot of the big film industry people contacts.
Right. Now this next one goes to both of you. What are some projects that you're working on currently or want to endure on in the future? David?
Right now I'm in writing mode for a couple of things. I don't have much experience writing stuff that I want to direct personally, so it's really exciting and scary to go into that. I mean, I went to school at USM for writing, but writing a script is completely different, and I sort of want to challenge myself and write a new thing. So I have a short film and a feature-length film that I'm going to write this summer. They're already sort of like half-written, but they need a lot of work. That's my next big projects.
Malachi?
I'm always working on at least like 5 projects at one time. I'm usually writing a bunch of screenplays and videos, and right now I'm in post-production of a movie I tried to make during April break, which is called Columbidae. And I'm in post-production for that and trying to get on a trailer soon, maybe late July.
Now, Malachi, I've heard a lot about this Columbidae. Could you tell us a little more about the plot, or what do you hope to get out of it in the future?
The plot is just, it's the story about, you know, a group of teenagers, 3 friends that meet this rebellious heartthrob character, Nara. And, you know, these guys are bullied, and Nara teaches them how to crawl out of their shell and start, taking back what they think is theirs, you know, their respect stuff like that, and they fight back, and she teaches them how to fight back by using pranks. So the whole story is about them getting back at their high school rivals by using pranks.
Very cool, Malachi. So,
So David, you mentioned earlier that you you love to make music videos. That's you've worked on a few in the past. How was the cinematography different for music videos opposed to a feature-length film or a documentary?
Oh, that really depends. I mean, I think music videos are an amazing form that's really come into its own in the last, like, 10 years. A lot of people get their start making music videos. A lot of my favorite directors started there and then went on to make short films and feature films from there. I think the style of shooting and cinematography of a music video really depends on the song and the person directing, because you can do pretty much everything. There are so many styles that can appear in a music video. The stuff that I've made, I tend to be really story focused. I don't do the music videos I've done haven't had a lot of band performances. They've been more about characters and like a narrative, almost like telling a story more than just showing a band playing in a really cool location, which is how some music videos are made. So my cinematography just depends on the project. Like the one that Malachi and I most recently worked on, it was all shot in the attic of the building that I live in. And so it was really tight quarters, but we shot it over 4 days really slowly, and each shot is very meticulously composed, versus the one that Malachi and I worked on before that, which is we shot it just down the street. Actually, Jane was in this video.
Yeah.
It was for another band, and we shot it in, like, I think, like, half a day and then a full day of shooting. And it was really fast, so we just shot it really fast. And the cinematography looks really rapid and fast-paced, so every music video can have its own style if you want it to.
Thank you, David. We'd like to remind listeners that this is a call-in show. To call in, you call the number 780-4909. And now, David, you are part of a local film endeavor called Neptune, as am I. And you are quoted in the promotional video. You have a really amazing quote that we'd like to play. And so here it is.
From Aurora, Colorado, works at store 3533, the Stapleton Supercenter. He walked off his job in the...
Sorry, technical difficulties.
Was not it, but, well, while we're looking for that, David, I have another question. So when you're making these music videos, do the bands have any say with what goes on in the videos, or do you pretty much have the final say or the vision of the video itself?
I like to work collaboratively as much as possible. That's like why I prefer to do film work as opposed to writing, because I like interacting with people and I like having multiple people in on the creative process. So I always like to work with the bands. Some bands are really hands-off. They kind of say, do whatever you want and make it awesome, and that's enough. Like the video that just came out this week was for a band called Frontier Ruckus from Michigan. And it's a song off an old album that I've always been in love with. And they said, do whatever you want. Like, you want to make this project, just make it as good as you want it to be, and that'd be great. But other music videos, I work with the band and I work with the musician, and we come up with the idea together and we shoot it together. So it kind of varies, but I like when I can work with the band, because it's just, I don't know, it's more fun. And
So on that note, how is cinematography different from directing? Like, there, for our viewers that don't know, like, you say you do everything for your projects. What is the difference between cinematography and directing?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, cinematography is specifically making the decisions about the image itself, and running camera, especially on a shoot when you're on set with actors and in a scene, and the person holding the camera is the cinematographer or the director of photography. And they really just, like, they pull the trigger on the shot. They have the eye, you know, they have the eye for the shot. They know it looks good. They know what they want to get out of it. The director tends to work more with the actors, and they work with everybody to try to help everybody do their job better. But specifically, they help the actors give the best performance that they can. But especially when you're working in small crews, like the way a lot of main filmmakers do, you end up doing a lot of both, you know. Sometimes the director and the producer are the same person. Sometimes the director is running camera. Sometimes, like, I edit a lot of my stuff that I direct too. So there are a lot of overlapping roles.
Now, it looks like we have a caller from Portland. Kaita, are you there?
Hi, this is Kaita, actually. Hi, David. Hi, Malachi. I have a question. Malachi, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your genre. I think that it's important to talk about some of the work, some of the films you won, and some of the... So I guess I want you to talk about that style of film that you started, and then you're up into the last film that you're in post-production with, which was a really big campaign, an Indiegogo campaign, where you actually orchestrated, got to use a red camera, you got permits. I mean, it was a big deal. But from that, from like Caged and Wake Up, could you talk a little bit about that transition, number one? And number two, I'm just wondering, what does it feel like to be an African-American youth who lives in Maine who's actually doing this work?
I guess, so I started with the genre of psychological thrillers, and I started with the small camera, and I gradually increased up to the red camera with Columbidae, and I guess, sorry, can you repeat the question a little bit shorter?
So just talking about, I guess you answered it. So you talked about starting off with this small psychological thriller and then moving into this, I don't know what genre you would call it, kind of a comedy, but maybe just talking about it, I think that's a big range in experimenting from that to where you are now, and maybe just talking about what did you like about maybe when you first started to where you've moved to now. And then the second question is, as an African-American youth in Maine doing this work, what is that like in terms of your peer and just being able to have this opportunity to develop this?
It's great. But I and my other films, Columbidae was very hard for me to make. I've always been very ambitious, as a lot of my friends and filmmaker friends have told me. And I, with Columbidae, I had to raise about $2,000 to make, and that was just for 4 days of shooting, 4 or 5 days of shooting, and we haven't even been able to finish the actual film itself. We just were able to get a bunch of scenes and put together a trailer. So I had no idea how hard it was to put together an actual feature film itself. And so that's one of the things that I'm still learning as a filmmaker here, as a young filmmaker. With my original films, they weren't as big of a scale as Columbidae, where it had at least like 20 crew members or so.
Now, Malachi.
Well,
thank you for that insight, and Kaida, thank you for that question. It's very, very insightful, and that kind of brings me to another question. You mentioned genres. Now, this is for both of you. What genres do you want to work with in the future, and kind of are you interested in? Malachi?
I'd like to go into the action comedy. Quentin Tarantino is a big inspiration for me. And I think I'd like to juggle around from action comedies to psychological drama, stuff like that. Or I think around that genre would be good.
I've made a lot of music videos in the last 6 months, but right now I'm switching into some more narrative stuff. I'm really into urban Maine, because I think a lot of people explore rural Maine, and especially coastal Maine is really like seductive for imagery reasons and for story reasons. But I really love Portland, and I think you don't see a lot of films about urban Maine, and I really like that possibility. So I'm going to do some like more character driven drama studies in Maine.
All right. So we are going to play that clip we talked about earlier. Here we go.
That because there is not a lot of infrastructure and resources People are fueled by their passion, and they come to the table and they come to the work because of their own motivations.
So that was kind of short, but basically, could you please explain that quote? We thought we kind of stood out when we watched that promotional video, and we thought it tied in with the theme of the show. So,
yeah, I mean, there are so many amazing, talented people in Maine, and Neptune is a really great project because it's a feature film by this director, Derek Kimball, who lives in town and in Portland. And this film is bringing a lot of people together to work together. And there aren't a lot of feature films that, at least in my community of sort of like low-budget, passionate people, there aren't a lot of films that we all work on together. Like, we all work independently on our own things, but we don't get to come together like this very often to work on the same project. And so it's really exciting to get everyone all coming together, working really hard, and really excited about this project.
So with bigger projects coming into Maine, I was wondering, where would you like to see the Maine filmmaking community in 10 years, David and Malachi? David?
That's a great question. I mean, for myself, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, you know. As much as I participate in local filmmaking, I'm certainly not, like, I can't speak for everybody as a whole because everybody has their own dreams. But I want to keep making work, and I want to make stronger work, and I want to make riskier work. And I want to make work that honors Maine and tells Maine stories, because the reason I moved here instead of moving to New York or LA to work is because I like the stories, the possibilities of Maine stories. There are a lot of stories that you can tell here that can't happen elsewhere because of the landscape, because of the people, because of our character. And I want to keep making those stories, and I want to just get better at telling them.
Malachi?
Yeah, I agree. I think Maine is a very beautiful place, and I know that even if I seek work elsewhere outside of Maine, I'd definitely like to come back here and hopefully come back with a stronger sense of film and directing, and hopefully even maybe make a movie here in Maine.
Now, to go along with that, where would you like to see yourself, David, in 10 years from now? Any projects that you like to work on, or any plans?
Oh, I've got an entire book full of projects that I could spend my entire life working on and never get through. I mean, I really love feature-length films, and I've never made one, a narrative film. I've made a feature-length documentary, but the narrative, I want to work in narrative fictional films because I want to tell stories that can't be told yet. You know, I want to tell stories about things that have not happened but could happen. And so there are a lot of stories that I want to tell. I'm really obsessed with Jean Genet, this French writer. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of want to do a biopic about Jean Genet, mm-hmm. because his life is really fascinating to me. There's the poet Mina Loy, who has a really amazing backstory that I've always dreamt about telling that story to. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of stories out there to be told, and hopefully in my lifetime I'll get to tell a few of them.
Malachi?
I would like to stay probably around the feature. I think I'd like to work more around feature films.
Have you ever considered making a documentary, do you think?
Well, actually, our school went down, our junior class went down to West Virginia, and we did some documentary work for people with working for Habitat for Humanity, and we are culminating tomorrow at the Salt Gallery at 6 p.m. if anyone wants to come down. But I just finished a documentary piece there, and it was very interesting, and I might pursue that later on as well.
Cool. Thank you, Malachi. It looks like we're going to break right now, but I just want to thank our guests, Dave and Mickeljohn and Malachi Wooden, and stay tuned. We'll be talking to Ben Fowley
And Sam Neiman.
Thank you.
WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, merchants, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu. And there's a flood watch in effect from late tonight through Wednesday morning, so look out. And today it's partly sunny, I've already experienced. Tonight, rain. Tuesday, some patchy fog. Highs in the upper 50s. Tuesday night, rain in the evening, then showers after midnight. Lows in the lower 50s. Some north winds around 10 miles per hour. And Wednesday is going to be mostly cloudy with occasional showers. And highs in the lower 70s. So, summer is coming early. And, oh yeah, you're listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland. This is Blunt Youth Radio.
Back with Blunt Youth Radio. My name is Trenton Johnson.
And I'm Jane Ackerman.
And we're talking about independent films here in Portland, Maine, and also nationally.
And we're just going to remind you that this is a call-in show, ladies and gentlemen. So the number is 780-4909. That is 780-4909.
And also you can check us out online at bluntradio.org, where you can check past shows and our features as well. So right now in studio, we still have David Micklejohn, and
on the phone, I believe we have Ben Fowley.
Ben Fowley.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
How's it going? Hey, David, how you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Very good. So, you guys hear me okay?
Yes, perfect.
Yeah, definitely. So, Ben, you are the producer and founder of the Camden International Film Festival. Can you tell our listeners what a film festival is? Are there panels? Are how many films are screened, etc.?
Sure, yeah. Well, festivals can be a lot of different things. Obviously, I think the most notable ones would be the larger industry events like Sundance, South by Southwest, Toronto, Venice, Rome.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you look around, most communities, most towns, at least in the U.S., seem to have some kind of festival event. And mainly they're there to provide some kind of cultural opportunity for the community, or kind of some type of economic, you know, revenue stream. So our festival, the Camden International Film Festival, started about 10 years ago. This is actually our ninth edition this year. And we kind of looked at every kind of model of a film festival and really tried to do something a little bit different. So we're a regional festival, obviously taking place in Maine, but having a larger presence throughout New England. And we only focus on documentaries, which is something, you know, somewhat unique for festivals. So we're kind of working on more of a niche programming and niche audiences. So we screen about 80 films a year. Half those are features, half those are shorts. A small percentage of those are films that have been shot either by filmmakers in Maine or in Maine that have some kind of local connection. And another thing that kind of separates us from other festivals is that we actually, since we started the festival, we've been really committed to bringing filmmakers into the community. And to us, that's really an important interaction that happens when you bring in artists, whether they're local or from around the U.S. or the world, how they interact with the community, especially within documentary, where a lot of the films kind of, you know, leave audiences wanting to engage in conversation and dialogue much more than, you know, the 90-minute film will allow.
Great, thank you, Ben.
So, and that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, and now we're talking a lot about film festivals, but what role does a film festival play in the independent film industry?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think that every year kind of changes, but the most important thing I think is what most people will tell you is that in a lot of ways, the independent film festival circuit, which again begins, you would think, in the U.S. with Sundance and then goes up through the fall in Toronto before it goes over to Europe in November and December, it's really kind of taken the place of a theatrical run for independent filmmakers, where there's a handful of films that are you know, picked up for theatrical distribution. And way too many films obviously being made for any theatrical outlet to choose every single one. So it allows filmmakers who might not get a distribution deal to put something together themselves, to secure screenings, throughout the country, and also to generate press and buzz, which is, you know, a very important, thing that a festival does. No matter how big or small, you're getting reviews, you're building your audiences in locations around the country. And really, you're furthering your career so that you can kind of use the springboard, the relationships, the connections that you've built throughout the festival circuit to engage audiences with your next project, whether it be a feature or a short or whatnot.
So you talked about
building. It really comes down to audience development at a base level.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about building buzz for films. I was wondering what part social media plays in finding distributors for the films to make them more accessible to wider audiences?
You know, that's a good question. I think it works. You know, I mean, I can speak on the documentary side of things and the impact that social media plays. And probably if you were interested in documentary and developing a doc, I think probably if you were to sit down with a consultant or someone that would work on a story with you, the first thing that they would say is, you know, what is your audience? You have to know your audience before you even start shooting. Otherwise, if you're trying to answer those questions while you're in production or post-production, you're already losing kind of that opportunity. So when you finish your film, you want to make sure that you know your audience well enough so you can engage all your social media campaigns and outlets to further build your audience. And again, most documentaries have some kind of, I don't want to say most, but there's a lot of social impact films out there, documentary films, that you can kind of work to create a social media strategy with cultural organizations, universities, mm-hmm. You know, partners that will really help feed your trailer, your synopsis, your logline, or whatever it may be, out to a much larger audience. So,
yeah,
definitely. So Ben,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so your hometown, you're originally from Camden, Maine, but yeah. You told New England Film in an interview that LA would not be a place for you. Why is that? Why did you decide to come back to Maine?
for some reason that New England Film article is from 2005, and I love it because I was talking with someone yesterday. He was writing his PhD thesis on film festivals, and he brought that up, and I was like, "Wow, geez, that was a long time ago." So I actually have gone to LA a few times since then, and I'm liking it more and more every time I go. But I think the reason why I said that was because I started the festival after I graduated from Emerson College. I had a BFA in film and journalism, and a lot of my friends at that point, it was kind of right before documentary started getting super popular in the 2005 era, a lot of my friends were moving out to LA to do a very structured, internship route that would ultimately maybe lead them to whatever position they were looking to do in the film industry. Mm-hmm. And those are mostly like Hollywood big budget or commercial work. And
yeah.
I really had no interest in that. So my passions lie with documentary, with more, nonfiction based media. And for me, the idea of interning for, 3 or 4 or 5 years after college, when, obviously everyone's looking to try and make money or whatever, to get a job that's going to help pay off their loans or whatever it is, didn't seem like the best route for me. And so I looked at the festival as a way to get build some relationships within the community, within the film, independent film community, without having to intern. So, I knew I had a very supportive community in Camden that would be interested in helping get the festival off the ground. And in turn, I could utilize Camden as a way to meet filmmakers and mm-hmm. to meet other industry members. So that was kind of the route. And my program at Emerson was really pushing people to go out to LA because obviously they're looking for success stories within the system that's already in place.
Yeah.
The internship to assistant to whatever route that is. And for college, that makes sense to have that kind of like security. But if you're not interested in, I think a lot of Mainers are like very independent spirit, and they just want to do their own thing. And so we're lucky that we have that drive and kind of make it work.
Thank you, Ben.
To work.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have a caller, Sam, on the phone. Sam, are you there?
Hi. Am I on TV?
Yes.
You're on TV.
This is Sam Neiman. Correct? Yes.
Hi, Sam.
That's right. How do you do?
Good. So we would like to ask Ben and David, why Maine? What's the draw to Maine? Ben?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay. Well,
why not?
I grew up in Maine, and there's just something about it. I think the people that everyone that I work with on the festival, probably not everyone, but I would say 75% of the crew have been with me since day one. They graduated from, Camden Rockport High School. It's not mm-hmm. that, I don't call that anymore, but, we were all just looking for something to do in the community that we grew up in. And I haven't met, I've just met so many creative and talented people that are willing to get involved and make things happen from everything I've done in Maine. It's just worked out so well for me. I don't know. David, got anything else to add?
Great. Thank you, Ben. But before we move on, we do have Sam Neiman here online from Portland, Oregon. And Sam, you are an animator. You worked on different projects such as Portlandia and the Mr. Man Show. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been a freelance animator for about 15 years, and it's been a lot of fun. I fell into animation a little bit accidentally when I did go to art school. I studied painting, and then an animator friend of mine said he needed help where he worked. I was just working in a lumberyard at the time. So I said, sure. And the first animation I ever did was the weekend before my job interview. but I got the job, and I've been doing it ever since. I really, really love it.
Well, and now, how is your art background? This is the show's on independent films, but how's your art background helped you as an animator?
You know, these days you don't necessarily have to do a lot of drawing to be an animator, but I think it really helps. Used to be, you certainly had to do a lot of drawing to be an animator. And so the kind of animation I do is a little bit old school. I'm an old guy now. kind of embrace the old ways. And, of course, a lot of young people do. People still love to draw. And so I think my art training helped immensely.
On that note, I'd like to ask all of you what your influences are for your work. Sam?
I watched a lot of Bugs Bunny growing up. if I had to pick one major influence, I might have to say Chuck Jones.
Ben?
Hello?
Ben?
I would probably say for me, the work of Fred Wiseman. Studied mm-hmm. him a lot in school. He's been making documentary films for the better part of, I'd say, 50 years at this point. And you know, really kind of a pioneer in verite. For me, he's just kind of my idol.
All right, David?
I think I'm really influenced by poetry. I read a lot of poetry, and I study poetry here at USM. And I think poetry, even though, like, poetry is especially difficult to translate visually, because it's a lot of it's abstract, a lot of it's emotional, a lot of it could not possibly exist in the real world. It's like poetry is its own thing that only can exist as poetry. So translating it into film is really impossible, and I think that's why I like it so much, because it's so far distant from film, and I think that's why I am so inspired by it.
Yeah, thank you. And Sam, a quick question for you. We're here in Portland, Maine. You're there in Portland, Oregon, and both cities have similar, I'd say,
aesthetics.
Culture, yeah.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of work, or you've worked with Portlandia. How do you think the show is poking fun at the culture of the hipster culture? How do you think that influences the independent film industry there? I'm not sure.
And, like, the stereotypes
right.
of people involved in the industry.
Yeah, well, I think just more of that begets more, you know. I think I think they came here to produce the kind of show they did with Portlandia because there was a lot of that stuff going on. And then, of course, the national attention that gave just encourages people to do more, which is just fantastic.
And you told me in an email that in the future you'd like to work more with independent directing and do some more other than animating. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what you'd like to do in the future?
Yeah, well, maybe not other than animating. It really is a passion, but I would certainly like to expand the kinds of things I get to do with animating. You know, a lot of my money is made doing, oh, I don't know if I would want to say shameful things, but let's say I hawk a lot of sugar cereals. And so the independent stuff is done in the spare time, of which there's a very scant amount. So, you know, it's kind of a dream to sell an idea to a network and get to run your own show, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
So we've asked David and we've asked Sam. Ben, we were wondering what projects you'd like to take on in the future. Ben?
Well, that's a really good question. I think I would love myself to get involved more with you know, I'm kind of a sickly obsessed with nonfiction filmmaking, which may need to stop at some point, but I want to get into producing more work, getting involved with filmmakers at an earlier stage and really trying to utilize anything I can do to help get projects off the ground and finished and, you know, maybe even getting filmmakers paid, which is kind of a rarity. But there's just so many talented people out there doing amazing hybrid work, doing work that is just pushing the boundaries of documentary that I really do think it's an exciting time to be involved. So the more I can do to help films get made, the happier I'll be.
Now, Ben, what kind of financial, or not only financial, but barriers in general, do you face when creating new pieces of work?
Can you repeat that one more time?
What kind of financial barriers or barriers in general do you face when you're brainstorming or creating a new film?
Well, I mean, I think that all depends. I mean, you know, depends on the project. You know, obviously funding is in the arts right now in general, whether you're an artist or an arts organization, is challenging at best. That being said, I think you're seeing a lot of, especially, you know, younger filmmakers who are able to shoot and edit because, you know, the equipment has gotten a little bit more manageable, you know, and affordable. People that are able to kind of one-man band it in a way that would have been a little bit more challenging 10 years ago, perhaps, or whatever. But I think any filmmaker needs to realize that it's going to be, no matter how big your budget is, whether it's $50,000 or you know, $500,000 or whatever it is, there's a wide gap there, but it's going to be a bunch of different ways to create revenue, whether it's broadcast or theatrical, which is pretty small, VOD, but really also arts organizations, Kickstarter, grants, family donations. It's going to be a lot of, you know, it's going to be a lot of piecing likely smaller donations together to create your project. And the one advice I could tell anyone who is listening to the show that is interested in making film and is at a film school, learn to edit, please, because editors, you know, have a real skill. You know, in the documentary world, they're just as important as the director. They're half the writers, and, you know, they've got day rates. They have opportunities to kind of balance between project to project and actually, like, you know, get paid and work on passion projects on the side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a really important skill that I would really suggest anyone in media really kind of focusing on, because I know a lot of editors that you know that are doing pretty well right now. So it's always great. Mm-hmm. Great to hear that.
And now, Sam, do you face similar barriers as an animator?
I don't know. I think it was mentioned how cheap and available the tools are now. It's really incredible to think about what I can put together in my basement, which just a few years ago would have taken huge machinery and, you know, thousands of dollars of equipment and film. We keep talking about making films. I don't think anybody talking has actually worked in film. I don't know. Literally with film. That's a presumption, of course. I haven't. But I call my little pieces films. It's just part of the vernacular now. But film was really expensive, and it's unnecessary now in a lot of ways, or for a lot of the kinds of projects. So, you know, if you're willing to, it depends on the project, obviously, but just a lot can be done on a shoestring.
All right, thank you, Sam. We would like to remind listeners that this is a call-in show. The number is 780-4909.
And also you can go online to our blog, bluntradio.org.
Trenton?
Ben, yeah, definitely. Now, how have you seen the local impacts of the Camden International Film Festival? Ben?
As far as, like, on the kind of development of filmmakers or just the economics?
Specifically in Maine.
In Maine,
like,
or the
economically.
The film directors, probably.
Yeah.
Most specifically.
Well, really quickly, economically, I think our region is starting to, you know, realize the impact. We just got the Economic Enhancement Award for the Penn Bay Chamber of Commerce. Which
congratulations.
Is nice because, you know, it's obviously wonderful. We need a lot of support from the community, so the more we can give back, the better. As far as development, we've got a two-day conference component called Points North that is strictly a kind of a media conference, media and film, independent film conference, where we bring a lot of really, really high-end respected industry and do 2 days worth of panels on interactive storytelling, digital distribution, understanding broadcasters to story development and editing workshops with Academy Award-winning editors. So that's a really, I think that's something that's really exciting for the state, because we have film festivals in the state, but we haven't really had a immersive kind of conference on, you know, really nuts and bolts on film story, you know, film structure and storytelling. You know, I'd like to think we're involved in some part in helping to strengthen the regional filmmaking community. That whole forum was built around the idea to take the products that were, you know, made in Maine or in New England and really showcase them to the rest of the larger film community. And a great example of that would be one of the films that we focused on our first year of the forum was a film called Betting the Farm, which is a film by Jason Mann and Cecily Pingree. Now, no doubt that film would have been finished and have done as well as it did without us, but we were able to connect them with a funder that really enjoyed their project, that met them personally at Camden, and they built a nice relationship. And then last year, we actually opened our festival with Betting the Farm, which is a phenomenal film. I would hope everyone would be able to go see it. And, you know, we had 800 people in town for it. It was just wonderful. So to see that whole cycle of you know, working with a project when it was just a pitch, you know, they had a 10-minute clip that they were sharing to, you know, annoying them over the course of 2 years to tell them to finish the project so we could screen it, and then finally having it done and being able to share it with a community with all the guests or all the subjects of the film and all these special guests who had been supportive of Jason and Cecily's work over the past couple of years. That was, you know, that was kind of one of the things that won't happen very often probably for me as a programmer, and it was really, really exciting to see. But I'm just blown away by the work that's being created in state right now, either, you know, narrative or doc, and it's exciting to be even a very small part of that. So I would add real quick that the person who works in the our managing director, Carolyn Von Kuhn, she actually has worked with Tribeca for the past 6 years in the off season, but she shot a film, a feature narrative here 2 summers ago called Like the Water. Beautiful piece, co-written by Caitlin Fitzgerald, who's a Camden native and doing quite well in the acting world in L.A., but you know, she loved her experience so much when she was shooting the film that she wanted to find a way to come back to Camden and spend more time here. So I pulled her into the festival, and she's now writing her second script to be shot here in Midcoast, Maine at some
Great,
point.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm sorry.
We have to wrap up soon, but we're reaching the end of our show. But I just wanted to thank, real quick, David Micklejohn, Sam Neiman, and Ben Fowley for being on our show.
And Malachi Whitten.
And also Malachi Whitten.
All right, thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much. And I also want to thank our engineers, Izzy Terciano and
Isaac Woodbury
High,
and Ava Zwolinski and Sarah Gale.
Right, and next up is Jazz.